To succeed, just let go. This is Willie Horton, exploring how we must and can take control of our state of mind and transform our lives. You're very welcome.
On many occasions over the years, whether it be in this podcast, my Thursday morning videos, my Wednesday evening Zooms with my online program owners, or indeed with all the people with whom I've worked over the last 30 years, on many occasions you will have heard me say that you are the most important person in your life. And until you look after yourself, you're in no position to look after anybody else, or worse than that, until you look after yourself, you're a danger to everybody else because your mind is running on automatic pilot. You don't know what's going on and you're automatically reacting to what you think about what you don't know that is going on. Mad stuff. And that is why I keep saying that you are the most important person in your life. What about the second most important people in your life? What about the people with whom you have close relationships? Today I want to talk about relationships in general, but personal relationships in particular. We can leave the work relationships and stuff about leadership and collaboration and teamwork for some other day. I want to talk about the stuff that impacts most fundamentally some of our everyday experiences. Relationships we have with those we love or think we love or claim to love, the relationships that we have with those we know we should try to love but can't, the close personal relationships that we have, and the broader sphere of relationships that we have on a personal level. Because even though you will have heard me use the word effortless or the word effortlessness many times on this podcast, it may well strike you, and it often strikes very many people, that being in a relationship isn't effortless. Indeed, the old expression that you have to work at a relationship is one with which many people can empathize. It strikes a chord. For the very simple reason that every relationship requires compromise. And compromise is an affront to the conceptual self, the person that you think that you are. Because whilst we learned how to collaborate, negotiate and communicate with people, and indeed manipulate people during the third year of our lives when we were learning so-called theory of mind, we didn't really learn how to compromise. Because those four eights that I mentioned, the four eights being communicate, collaborate, negotiate, and manipulate. The four eights are all about getting what I want out of any situation in which I find myself. That's why we learn theory of mind during the third year of our lives, to enable us maneuver our way around other people to get what we want. In the process, as we've said before, during that third year of our lives, we learn the fundamentals about ourselves. They congeal into a body of programming which gives us our impression of ourselves, which cognitive psychology calls the aforementioned conceptual self, who I think I am. And in the process of creating who I think I am, I put up all kinds of defense mechanisms. I have some attack mechanisms as well. And all of these come together to bring me to the point where, as an adult, as I said a moment ago, to compromise is an affront to the person who wants to get what they want out of life, your conceptual self. And that is where the struggle comes from. That's where the hard work comes from. In any relationship. Let's park that there for a minute and explore what kind of relationships am I talking about. I've worked one-to-one with people for the last 30 years. I've obviously worked in groups, open workshops. I have my online program, but a lot of my one-to-one work boils down to the problems, issues and challenges that people have with close personal relationships. People have often said to me, oh, I'm having trouble at work, I'm having trouble at home. And I will invariably say to them, Let's park the trouble of work. You know, that's easy to deal with. If you don't like where you are at work, you have two choices. You can either change your mind about what you think about work or actually change your job. That's easy stuff. But you can't resign from your family, or at least people think they can't resign from their family. We'll come back to that in a minute. And, you know, leaving a longtime partner is a difficult proposition for everybody, regardless of how dysfunctional the partnership might be. So here we're talking about one-to-one relationships, first of all, husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, 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 boyfriend, boyfriend. And we're talking about the relationships that we have or sometimes often don't have with our children. And we're talking about, and this is one of the most trying situations in relation to which I talk with people, we're talking about the relationship with our own parents as well. Now, the first point I would make in relation to any relationship is that no relationship will truly blossom until you truly blossom yourself. Now, I know this from a personal perspective, and I know this from the perspective of working with people as a psychologist for the last 30 years. No relationship will properly blossom until you properly blossom yourself. So that goes back to what we said at the beginning of today's episode. You are the most important person in your life. And until you get your own head straight, you're in no position to behave yourself properly around anybody and everybody that you encounter in your everyday life. Or if I can put it another way, you can't help anyone else with their oxygen mask until you have properly adjusted yours first. What am I talking about in terms of getting your head straight? What am I talking about in terms of your being the most important person in your life? I'm talking about your state of mind. I'm talking about how you allow your mind operate and how you allow it operate in your favor rather than operate against you, which is what the conceptual self actually does. Briefly, the conceptual self gives you your impression of all your perceived strengths and perceived weaknesses. As we said a few minutes ago, it will also provide you with a number of psychological defense mechanisms. The conceptual self is all about bad selfishness. The conceptual self is all about making you feel better about yourself, because the conceptual self majors on the misgivings that you have about yourself. It is an evolutionary thing to keep you on your toes and to ensure that you remain alert to life-threatening situations, which obviously arose in evolutionary times, but don't arise now, as a result of which the conceptual self sees threats around every corner where threats actually don't exist, because it doesn't know what's going on, because it is providing you with an experience of the here and now that has nothing to do with the reality of the here and now, because of what you learned about yourself when you were 2 or 3 years old, when your conceptual self was formed. And that is what I mean about looking after yourself first. That is what I mean about you being the most important person in your life. When I say that, I am not talking about your conceptual self. I am talking about who you really are. In other words, you without the automatic pilot running your life. We explore that in detail in the episode entitled Thinking, Overthinking, Believing and Knowing. We talked about the conceptual self in detail. And what I mean about disengaging the part of your mind that is actually working against you. When you do that, you discover who you really are. So many people over the years have asked me, what am I talking about when I talk about the real you? And I could talk about it until the cows come home, but you'll only know what I'm talking about when you experience the real you. And as we've said on multiple occasions over the course of all these podcast episodes, you discover that through allowing your mind settle, allowing your mind clear, and allowing your thinking mind, your automated thinking mind, drift off over the horizon. We do that through meditation, and regular meditation will get you there without you having to do anything else. There is an abundance of science that confirms that. Indeed, that abundance of science confirms that meditation is the only way in which you can restructure the parts of your brain that will allow the real you to emerge. And it's when the real you emerges that you are in a position to have real and fruitful and blossoming relationships with those around you. Let me put it another way. It is only when the real you emerges that you are fully present. Because when we're using our minds normally, on automatic pilot, we're missing an action. We're lost in the past, thinking that it is the present and worrying about the future. We're never actually present. But when we allow our automated mind to disengage, when we allow our real selves come to the surface, we are present. In other words, we have presence. And presence is attractive. And I mean that from the perspective of hard science, quantum physics, and the science of bioelectricity. When I'm present, I actually become something of a magnet because I create a coherent electromagnetic pulse as a result of my own presence and absence of automated thinking, allowing my energy to flow freely. And when I flow freely, I create a coherent electromagnetic pulse that actually draws other people into my orbit because presence is actually scientifically attractive. Now, we know this experientially because we all know that it's nice to hang out with people who have charisma or presence. So when we look after our own state of mind, we become present. And that means we have presence. And for starters, that means that when we actually say that we want to be there for our partner or there for our children, we actually begin to know what being there actually means. People who say, oh, I'm there for you, if they're using their minds normally, first of all, they haven't a clue what they're actually talking about. And secondly, they can't be there. You can't be there for anybody else if you haven't turned up for yourself first. So again, to reiterate a point that I've said on so many occasions before, you are the most important person in your life. Understanding that through experience means that the relationships that you have are going to blossom. The first thing that will happen as a result of your truly turning up in any situation in which you find yourself with anyone with whom you have a relationship, the first thing that will happen is that compromise, which is an awful struggle and hard work to the thinking mind, compromise becomes natural. It becomes effortless. Compromise isn't compromise anymore. We simply end up doing the right things in the right way for ourselves and those around us so that everybody moves forward and that those with whom we have relationships bask in our own presence. Now, before we go any further, there are some people that don't want to bask in anybody's presence. There are some people whose conceptual self is so skewed as a result of what was done to them during their formative years that nothing will budge them. Nobody's presence will actually raise their game. I'll give you an example. One of my earliest clients many, many years ago, who was also a personal friend, was in a marriage that ended on the second evening of the three-day workshop that he participated in with me. This guy, as I said, was one of my first clients. He attended probably my second or third three-day workshop, as it was at the time. That is what has now become my online program. And on the middle evening, he went home, the Wednesday evening, packed a little suitcase, and told his wife of 23 years that he was leaving her and it would be best for both of them. The first thing that she obviously asked was there somebody else? And he said, no, there's nobody else, which actually made the whole trauma for her conceptual self even worse. He realized, as his own true self began to emerge from the shadow of his conceptual self, that the relationship in which he found himself was bad for him and obviously having a deeper understanding of the impact we have on other people. If it was bad for him, it was also bad for her. Now, subsequently, they both realized that he made the right decision that Wednesday evening, although it took a little bit of working through on her part to realize that that was actually the case. I knew this guy as a friend, and myself and our mutual acquaintances were also aware of the fact that he had a potentially life-threatening illness. And were it not for the fact that we were aware of that, he may have actually lost his life one particular evening. But what emerged in subsequent conversations was that about 6 months after he met his future wife, he had developed this life-threatening illness. And about 6 months after he left her on that Wednesday evening, his life-threatening illness was no more. Now, we've covered before in great detail how our state of mind impacts our state of health. We've covered on many occasions how a mind that is ill at ease creates a body that is diseased. And when we're in a bad relationship, the bad energy that swirls around something like that has an impact not just on people's experience of everyday life, but on their own body's health and wellness. Be that as it may, because I don't want to get into that here now, the key point I wanted to make was that not everybody responds to your burgeoning awareness that simply effortlessly emerges as a result of your becoming increasingly present by allowing your automated thinking mind vanish off onto the horizon and beyond. But most people will actually respond to the presence that we develop as a result of taking charge of our own state of mind. People have often asked me how I got into psychology in the first place, having been an accountant, a tax consultant, and a banker. And in answer to their question, I always tell them the story of the moment that changed my life. I was working in a bank. I was the general manager of corporate strategy for a bank that had gone bankrupt. My job was to turn that bank around, make it profitable so that the owner could sell the bank. And I would take my colleagues and the senior management team away for 2 or 3 days to nice hotels where we would strategize, God help us, plan, God help us, you know what I think of planning now, and come up with new ways of doing things that would enable the bank move forward. And after 2 or 3 days of agreement, they would go back to head office and fall back into the same behaviours that had led the bank to the brink of bankruptcy in the first place. I couldn't understand what was wrong with these people. They knew what they were doing, or at least I thought they knew what they were doing. I went in search of somebody who could explain to me what was wrong with these, as it turned out, normal crazy people. And I discovered a retired or semi-retired American psychologist called Jerry Kuschel, who was operating out of a place called Villars-sur-Ollon in the Swiss Alps at the time. So I went over and spent some time with him and asked him what was wrong with these people. And he told me there's nothing wrong with them that isn't wrong with you. They're using their minds normally. And until you realize this and change the way you use your mind, you're not going to substantially change your life either. I returned home from Villars-sur-Ollon, and my wife told me that the guy that came back in the door was not the guy who had left a couple of weeks before. My life had changed completely. I had realized that I was the most important person in my life, and I had also realized that until I had realized that I was the most important person in my life, I wasn't the kind of partner that she really deserved. Now, obviously, I won't go into details, but let me say this, that I've worked with so many people one-to-one from a business leadership point of view, and they realize that actually what we're talking about is not business leadership at all. It's more fundamental than that. It is about the personal relationships that are important to us in our lives. Case in point, I got a phone call about 8 years ago from a guy who had been on one of my face-to-face workshops a few years previous to that. He had just been appointed to a very senior leadership position in the company that he worked for and asked me would I do a series of one-to-one conversations with him because he didn't think he was leadership material, which was absolutely bloody stupid because obviously his employers thought he was. Why would he second guess his big promotion? Anyway, we had our first conversation by telephone. This is in the days before Zoom. And about 2 weeks later, we had our second conversation. And the first thing he said to me at the start of our second conversation was, he said, "By the way, my wife has told me that since I talked to you a fortnight ago, I've become a much nicer person." Very often, our partners, husbands, wives, boyfriends, girlfriends, are the first people to notice the change that we very often don't even notice ourselves as we begin to develop our presence. Basically, coming back to what I said a minute ago about my own personal circumstances, I was, like the rest of us, a normal, crazy person until I woke up in 1992. And when I woke up, everything changed. We talked about compromise right at the beginning of this episode. Compromise is something that is the right thing to do when you are present. And that changes the dynamic, obviously, between you and your loved one. Let's stick with the one-to-one personal relationship for a minute. But there's more to it than that. There's more to it simply than your presence being attractive. There's more to it than your presence uplifting those around you. Fundamentally, what is happening at an energetic level is that in tuning my energy in to the universal pulse of energy through my being present, my energy has an impact, obviously a positive impact, on those with whom I am close. And as I said, we're sticking with one-to-one relationships for just a minute. And that is how, through my blossoming, my relationship blossoms. That is how through our blossoming ourselves, that our close relationships blossom. And it's something that literally happens naturally, as surely as night follows day. You're not going to have to figure out how to behave better with your loved one. You're simply going to start behaving properly, as distinct from reacting and misbehaving, which is what we all do when we're using our minds normally in an automated fashion. In terms of our relationships with our children, or in some cases, the lack of relationship with our children, we need to realize, first of all, that if we were simply operating on automatic pilot as normal crazy people, when they were 2 or 3 years of age, learning for themselves theory of mind, learning for themselves how to manipulate, communicate, negotiate, and collaborate, we did things to them. We said things at them that actually had a negative impact on them without our intention being negative at all. Very often, an adult's throwaway remark, even a humorous throwaway remark, will not be taken humorously by a three-year-old child who is only developing their sense of humor and understanding of, for example, sarcasm. Normal crazy parents create normal crazy children, as surely as night follows day again. But that doesn't mean if your child is 10, 12 or 25 or 45 at this stage that there is no going back, because once again, your presence has an impact on those around you and in particular those with whom you are close. Let's look at it from another perspective, because we talked a moment ago about how it's not just presence, how the dynamics of a relationship actually change at the fundamentals of our flow of energy. Let's look at it, as I said, from another perspective, and look at it from how modern science determines that our state of mind affects the moment-to-moment construction and reconstruction, configuration and reconfiguration of our DNA. In other words, if I'm in a bad mood, my DNA will be, to put it unscientifically, more tangled up than it would be otherwise. Now, the research in relation to this is mind-bending when you consider that the actual research took place at two different locations. At one location where the participants in the research who were being encouraged to be in different moods, and in an entirely different location was their DNA, which had been swabbed from them before the experiment took place. And the minute their mood changed at one location, the configuration of their DNA altered at a remote location. That is an insight into how, as quantum physics would have it, we are all connected at a non-local level. And I'm not going to go into that today. We've explored that before as well. But the world works in a way in which your thinking mind couldn't even begin to imagine. The real impact of what I've just said is that obviously my mood in affecting my DNA has an impact, albeit subtle, on those with whom I share DNA, my children. So in other words, my presence around my children doesn't need to be a local thing at all. I don't even need to be talking to them or in communication with them. My mood is going to affect their mood through their own DNA at a non-local level, regardless of where they are. I have an impact on them simply by virtue of my being me where I am here and now, for better and for worse. In other words, if I'm operating on automatic pilot, my DNA is all over the place and that's having an impact on their DNA. If I am present, my presence is having an impact on my and their DNA. And that is one of the ways, we've already covered the energetic way, one of the ways in which we can foster more beautiful and blossoming relationships with our children. Now, obviously, this works up the line as well as down the line. And one of the biggest issues I've had to deal with clients over the years is abusive parents. Not their being abusive parents to their children, but the way in which they are continually experiencing the abuse of their parents, which they may have particularly experienced during their formative years. Most people don't grow up or develop wisdom with old age. Most people just simply grow old. And the older normal crazy people get, the more normal crazy they actually become. And it would tug at your heartstrings, bring tears to your eyes, to hear some of the conversations that I have had with people who are grappling with parents behaving badly. To the point where on one of our program owner Zooms a couple of years ago, one of my online program owners suggested, with her tongue firmly in her cheek, that we should set up a parent swapping scheme, or we could adopt each other's parents. She'd had enough of one of her parents in particular. It reminds me of many years ago, I was probably only 15 or 16 at the time, myself and my brother and my father went for a long weekend to visit my older sister, who was living with her husband down the country in Ireland at the time. And my mother couldn't go because our grandmother, her mother, was staying with her for a few weeks at the time. We came back after the long weekend and my mother said to my father, "Get that woman out of this house. I nearly killed her over the weekend for the simple reason that the minute you walked out the door, she started bullying me the way she bullied me when I was 7 or 8 years old." This is so prevalent, and very often people with whom I work can see no way of having even a respectable interaction with their elderly parents. They can't imagine how they could have the kind of relationship that we experience when we're in complete flow. Indeed, they find it difficult to even manage their state of mind to maintain their flow when they are in contact with or the butt of behaviour of their parents. But my DNA affects those with whom I share DNA. And as I said, that works up the line as well as down the line. The more present I am, the less aggressive people will be towards me. Because presence is irresistible, even if you're boxed into your own horrible prison cell of conceptual self and all the bad behaviour that comes with the conceptual self, creating your everyday version of reality through automatic thinking. Presence is irresistible. Now, it doesn't mean, as I said earlier on, that one's presence will automatically enable those around us to bask in our presence. Some people are so locked in to their own way of thinking that they will never find a way out. But even if they are that locked in, one's own presence will have an impact on their DNA, on their experience of the moment, even if it is only through the way in which someone with presence doesn't react to the taunting of others, doesn't react to the misbehavior of others, doesn't react to to anything, because when we're present, when we're in flow, we take real action. We say the right things in the right way at the right time, even though we think we mightn't get away with it. And by that I mean the number of people with whom I have worked who have, in the most appropriate way, told their misbehaving parents what's what. And even though it may not have made the relationship perfect, it changes the dynamic in the relationship. And this is all about dynamics. If we go all the way back to talking about how presence impacts those around us, how presence is attractive, how our energy affects the energy of those around us, how the state of our DNA impacts the state of the DNA of those with whom we share DNA. It's all about dynamics. Every relationship is a dynamic. Most relationships are fraught because most relationships between normal crazy people are between two people who don't know who they are and who don't want to compromise. Or if they have forced themselves to compromise, there is effort and stress and struggle involved. And that is not how you create the kind of relationships that blossom to the point where other people look at you and say, oh, I wish I was like them. I wish we, myself and my partner, had the relationship they have with their children. Now, wishing, hoping and wanting will get you nowhere in this life. Being, turning up to the here and now and being present is what will get you what is best for you in this life. And that is why we need to go right back to the start and remind ourselves that we, meaning you and I, are the most important persons in our life. You are the most important person in your life here, right now. Once you begin to experience the reality of that through meditation, the dynamic that you have with everyone with whom you come into contact is going to change for the better. And the dynamic that you have with your nearest and dearest and those whom you love is going to become unrecognizable to the dynamics of normal, crazy, dysfunctional relationships and families. Once again, as always, everything starts with you looking after your own state of mind. Everything starts with you ensuring that you are present. Everything comes back to you ensuring that you remind yourself to be present when you find yourself going off the rails. As you will, as we all will from time to time, because we're all only human. But then again, let me finish on this little anecdote from a client who, many, many years ago, who would constantly lose the head with people with whom he was close, and in particular, his so-called at the time nearest and dearest. He told me when I met him first that he would fly off the handle, or to use his own words, jump off the cliff on the spur of the moment, and might take days to clamber back up. Over a period of time with regular meditation and a number of conversations, he would tell me, first of all, that when he found himself falling over the cliff, he could pull himself back pretty much straight away. Then he told me that he would get to the edge of the cliff and not fall over. One day, he had a conversation with me about a lovely weekend away that he had had with his wife. And he told me, you know, since I met you, since I developed my presence of mind, since I started meditating every day, I've got to the point where I realize there is no cliff. And there is no cliff to those who are present. Cliffs are the imaginary tipping points in which we lose the head, because we're not in charge of our own head when we are normal, crazy people. The world of beautiful being, the world of beautiful relationships, the world of spreading the joy through our own presence is at your doorstep, right here, right now. All you have to do is open the door, put one foot into the here and now through regular meditation, and experience the joy of being.
You've been listening to Succeed, Just Let Go. Hope you've got a little something to help you transform your life today.